So have you been planning a trip overseas or perhaps interstate in the next few months? Many Australians, of course, are looking forward to travelling again. However, it is unclear how the new COVID variant might affect those plans. And when it comes to the process of planning and booking, of course, how's that been for you? Because it's a whole new ballgame these days, isn't it? Quite complicated, a lot to organise, even if you're heading interstate as opposed to overseas. We're going to talk through the things you need to consider before taking any trip with our guest, who has been on the show before, travel writer Ben Groundwater. And I'd very much like to hear from you as well. I'd like to hear your experiences in trying to plan for travel, organise travel, whether it be, as I said, interstate or overseas. Ben Groundwater, hello. Welcome back to Life Matters.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Look, I'm okay. I know that you write extensively at the moment, Ben, for a range of publications and podcasts about the current state of play when it comes to travel. What are you hearing back from people as would-be travellers about how they feel about now?
Look, I'm hearing various things. You know, there's a lot of trepidation out there and a lot of unease, I suppose, in terms of what the travel experience is going to look like now, what the restrictions are going to be, how quickly things are going to change. But the flip side of that is I'm also getting emails from quite a few people, actually, who are out there traveling already and who are enjoying it, who are having a great time. You know, people, I wrote a story about stopovers last week and the sort of increased difficulty around stopovers now and whether that's a part of our sort of traveling culture that we're going to have to put to one side for a little while just because of the extra difficulties. And, you know, I've had a few people email me saying, look, they've done stopovers on the way over to Europe already. They've stopped in Doha. They've stopped in Singapore. Yeah. They've had a great time. They've managed to organize it all and it's all been smooth and enjoyable. So, you know, there are different sides to it. There's certainly understandable, as I was saying, trepidation in terms of what the travel experience is going to look like. But some people are doing it now and already enjoying it.
Just for those people who may not have thought about stopovers yet, as you said, you've written about them and then you've got some, you know, contraindicative emails back saying, oh, no, it's okay. Just explain why stopovers could be a bit of a hassle at the moment.
Essentially, travel overseas now, or travel anywhere, travel interstate, it involves a lot more research, a lot more knowledge, a lot more prior planning than it used to. You know, to get into a country, you have to do a PCR test generally, which is a COVID test that you have to take at a clinic or at a that costs a lot of money. From here, you know, we're looking at about $150. You have to have a lot of paperwork to get into another country. Essentially, what I was saying is that, you know, if say you wanted to go to Europe at the moment and you wanted to stop in Singapore, as a lot of us would have done in the past, now you'll have to take a PCR test to get into Singapore. You have to have a lot of paperwork. You have to have insurance. You have to have accommodation booked that is going to work for you. You have to take another test when you arrive in Singapore. You have to isolate in your hotel until you get the results from that test, which has to be negative.
Golly.
You know, then there.
Can I just keep? I need to keep asking you questions about this, Ben.
Sure.
So you mentioned
sure.
Singapore. When you said you need a PCR test before entering the country, I take it that means having a PCR test here in Australia before getting on the flight, what, 72 hours or less before getting on
exactly,
the flight?
Yeah, so that's going to a local pathology clinic that specialises in these, because you can't just go to the normal hospital clinic that you normally would to get a test that we're able to do for free at the moment, which is fantastic, but you don't get the right documentation for international travel when you do that.
Oh,
you just get a text
really?
Message saying that you're negative, and that's not good enough to get into another country. So you have to go to a local pathology clinic. You have to pay. You know, generally around about $150 at the moment. And you have to get all that documentation back. You have to download it. You have to print it out. You have to make sure you've got several copies of it to be able to get into a lot of it. You know, not all countries are like that at the moment. Like
but
the
Singapore
UK,
and Doha.
Rules.
Abu Dhabi,
most countries require a PCR test at the moment to get into the US is the same. Quite a few countries. I would generally expect that you have to do that rather than having to do the faster and cheaper rapid antigen test, which is a different style of testing, which some countries like the UK are currently accepting people to have.
I just want to clarify before we move on, Ben, you mentioned there in the case of Singapore, not only do you need this kind of private PCR test with the appropriate documentation to even get on the plane. Are you saying that once we get to Singapore, even as a stopover, we need to get another PCR test and get those results back before we can travel on?
Yes. So if you're transiting through Singapore, you don't have to have an extra test. You can just keep on going through as you normally would. If you're doing a stopover, which would be for a couple of nights, if you're leaving the airport and going out into Singapore proper, then once you get to Changi Airport, you have to have another PCR test when you get there, transfer straight to your hotel and self-isolate in that hotel until you have the results from that test at the airport, which can be as little as 6 hours, can be up to sort of 18 hours or so.
I can see how that could really affect, as you said, not only our choices for stopover, but also those stopover destinations having tourist throughput because, people would just get a transit from now on.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the case. I mean, like I said, I've had emails from people who have decided to do these stopovers and have enjoyed it, but it is an extra level of research because you have to know all of the things that you need to get into that place. You have to take these extra tests because obviously then to leave Singapore and go to your next destination, you need to take another PCR test, which is around about $200 when you're in Singapore. So, these sort of things add up. And
they do.
What used to be, a few hundred extra dollars to be able to stop in a different continent and a different city and enjoy that for a couple of nights is now not quite so doable, really, for a lot of people who are just going on short holidays.
We're talking about planning, organising travel, whether it be overseas. We've talked about that with Ben a bit at the moment, but it could be interstate as well and the different requirements of states and territories. How are you going with that? Have you been trying to plan these kinds of trips, albeit with the new COVID variant, of course, playing on all our minds at the moment and also on policy restrictions, perhaps? We don't know yet when it comes to border closures. But be that as it may, how's your planning going? What have you experienced? And do you have any questions for Ben when it comes to how you organise travel, whether it be local, as in national or international? Grant is in Sydney. Now, Grant, you're making travel plans for northern New South Wales, which, being a New South Welshman, shouldn't be too much of an issue, I would have thought.
Is that going to be okay? And crossing over to Umundi, in
Queensland.
The main thing is to make absolutely certain that wherever you book, whatever you're booking, is fully refundable. And in terms of a question to Mr. Groundwater, I would have thought that as a traveller and somebody paying for something, you can demand from the supplier, whatever they are, for an assurance, written assurance, that whatever you pay is fully refundable. We got caught, meaning my wife and I, got caught with travel plans in 2020.
And when you say caught, how much money did you find you weren't able to recoup?
About $1,000 all up.
Okay. And was that for international travel, Grant?
For international travel to the UK.
Right. And was this gap in refund from a travel agent or from flights or from accommodation or a mixture of all?
A mixture of all. And I'm afraid one of the things that I will never, ever do again is to book through a travel agent because they, and there's a particular one that uses an apparent crew member but in their advertising, that always shortchanges you. I won't mention them, of course, that always shortchanges you in terms of refunds, even though the supplier, Qantas in the case of 2020, would give a full refund. The people that we booked through, namely the captain, didn't.
Yeah, so, right. That's interesting to know. Yeah, Grant, thank you for that. And look, Ben Groundwater, just before we move on to other calls, Grant's raised some really vital points that need to be part of this discussion about refunds. And while he was very damning of a certain travel agent, I think there's acknowledgement in the industry, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but some travel agents have gone out of their way to try and make sure that people recoup any costs they may have had, and in fact have tried to get Australians home as well when they've been locked out of the country. So not all travel agents are the same. Let's be honest.
No, they're not. And quite often they're sort of the public face of other companies that they're trying to recoup money from and failing. It's not always the travel agents themselves who are not – passing over money. They're not getting the money in the first place from, you know, the cruise company or the airline or the hotel group or whatever it is. You know, they are the public face and they sort of cop the brunt of that. But I think, you know, certainly I'm sure there are cases where that's not happening. But in these COVID times, there's a case to be made that maybe a travel agent is actually a really good idea, because there's probably going to be flights that need to be changed. You know, we're going to have to be flexible and dynamic in our travel plans at the moment, particularly as things change so quickly. And, right. You know, having a travel agent on the end of the phone to do that is probably not such a bad thing.
Yeah, depending, of course, where you are. But, I mean, who wants to try and organise travel in the midst of some kind of holiday? It only adds to your stress levels and ruins the whole point of going overseas in the first place or interstate. So I fully take that. One other quick thing about refunds, and this is going to be a huge issue of concern for so many people, because as we discovered, Australians got burnt, certainly in 2020, 2021, over refunds from certain companies and certain packages, and which of course leads to a lack of confidence in booking again. So where are we at with refunds? What kind of policies are we seeing in place these days?
Yeah, it's tough. Look, there's no extra government regulations, essentially. So we're in the same boat as we were to begin with. I think Grant makes a very good point saying that you need to try to book as much fully refundable travel, you know, accommodation, transfers, attractions, everything that's fully refundable if you can. It's not always possible. You know, a lot of flights are not fully refundable. You might get credits back or vouchers that you can spend at a later date. But certainly a lot of accommodation is fully refundable now, and I would be looking into that before making any bookings, because things are changing so quickly, as we've seen with this new variant. Just when you think things are beginning to settle down a bit, it all changes once again. So
indeed,
yeah, I would certainly be wary about that at the moment.
Christina's in Sydney. Christina, you booked to go to the UK and the US using a travel agent. Was that a good idea?
Yes, it was. It was the best advice that I could have been given. It's just been helpful because the flights have already changed several times. And the travel agent just simply notifies me, asks me if, you know, if I'm happy with the change, and then we go ahead, which has been terrific. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed for a departure just before Christmas to visit my children in both the US and the UK. One thing I did want to raise is the COVID testing required when on arrival in the UK. It's now a 2-day PCR test. And it's a bit of a nightmare. They send you a link to a website which has 332 providers, and they don't give you any advice or any suggestions, and they range in price from £20 to £200.
Wow.
So it's quite a nightmare to find your way through that. Fortunately, I have my daughter over there, and she's helped me with that.
Let me just clarify before we move on, Christina. When you say a 2-day COVID PCR test, do you have 48 hours to get that test? Is that what you mean?
Yes, it's the on-arrival test if you're fully vaccinated. So they changed it only yesterday.
Oh.
And it's now a PCR test within 2 days of arrival.
Wow. Okay. Good to know, Christina. Thanks so much for that advice and all the best with your trip. I hope it all turns out very well indeed. Let's head off to Orange in the central west of New South Wales, one of my old stomping grounds back in the day. Hello, Tony.
Hi. How are you?
Not too bad. I understand you're heading to Tasmania for Christmas.
Just after, actually going on a walking holiday about the 27th, 28th. And we've booked a lot of it on the basis with Qantas and with our walking company. If you can't go, you get a credit for the walk and the flight at some point in the future. However, I guess my question for Ben is really around travel insurance. I've been burnt once with a policy we took out to go to Europe 2 years ago. But domestically, is he aware of any companies which will insure against having to, say, you know, stay in a hotel or go into quarantine if the worst happened and we got to Launceston and had to stay put for a few days? What's the insurance situation?
Great question, Ben.
Look, the short answer to that is no, basically. I'm not aware of any policies that do that at the moment. There's a lot of travel insurance companies now that are covering for the medical expenses of contracting COVID-19, which is a huge bonus for people. But in terms of being affected by COVID-19 closures and quarantines and, you know, that sort of thing, lockdowns, that sort of thing, people aren't covering for that at the moment. So that's a risk that travelers just have to take on board.
Okay.
So you can get cover for your medical expenses, though. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. You can, yeah, for internationally. And in Australia, obviously, you're sort of covered by Medicare already, so that's not so much of an issue here.
But if you're stuck, Tony, in Tassie because of a sudden border closure, it sounds to me, and from what I've read and along with what Ben just said, that there is no insurance company that's going to cover you for any costs associated with not being able to get home.
Okay. Well, let's hope it doesn't happen.
But, you know, in the meantime, suck the marrow out of that wonderful walking trip. You're going to the Three Capes?
No, going to Walls of Jerusalem. I've done the Three Capes. It's great, but this is a bit more out of the way and a bit longer.
Okay, well, have a great trip. I hope it goes really well, Tony.
I hope it doesn't rain all the time. That's all we're getting up to at the moment.
You're asking for too many certainties in Tasmania, I reckon, Tony. All the best with that one. Let's go to Northern New South Wales. Hello, Mavis. How are you? I heard you just come back from 4 months away.
I have. I was only supposed to be away for 3 months, but flights got cancelled, borders closed, so I had to extend it by 4 weeks. Fortunately, I was staying with relatives, with my children, so it was a great bonus, actually.
Oh, that's okay. So you didn't have to foot the bill for extra accommodation as a result. Did it add any stress to the trip, Mavis?
I was prepared for it. Before I left, I was determined to take whatever it gave me. I was just prepared. It wanted to go. You have to be prepared to be flexible. Even before I left, I had three flights cancelled just to get down to Sydney. I ended up going by train. So, you just have to be flexible and go with the flow.
Okay. And in so doing, can I ask, did you have to ask for some refunds because of cancelled parts of the trip, cancelled legs?
I only came back on Friday. I haven't even thought about that, but I did go through a wonderful travel agent. They were, I don't know, they were like my guardian angels, and it's hardly cost me anything extra at all.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's just amazing. They were fantastic.
That's great. Thank you so much for that, Mavis. We'd like to hear stories where trips go well despite maybe some bumps in the road. In Mavis's case, she said be flexible because things will change. She's ended up spending another month with her family overseas, which was okay. In fact, pretty good. It won't always be that way, but we'd like to hear your questions for Ben Groundwater, our travel writer and podcaster, and also your experiences in organising, planning, and in fact executing these trips, whether they be interstate or overseas. And if you can't get through, of course, there will be a full refund. Let's see who else is around at the moment. Let's go to Alison in Sydney. Now, Alison, cruises are back in operation, of course. How's that been for you?
I personally haven't been trying to book, but the process is quite simple, actually, because the testing requirements are for Fiji are before you travel 2 days prior, you have to have a PCR, 72 hours prior, you have to have a PCR test, and then they rapid test 2 days after arrival. Actually, for cruising in Fiji, they have a special category, so you can actually fly in and do the rapid test immediately, so you can fly on the day and join a cruise. And then because the cruise is obviously, it's hard to get the 2 days prior to departure test, they can also get a rapid test, a quick PCR test after they arrive back at the wharf and before they fly out. So it can all be done on the day in each direction for Fiji, which is really good.
And I should explain to people, Alison, you're president of the Australian Fiji Business Council.
I am. That's correct. And we've been really involved in trying to help get Fiji open over the last 2 years. It's been a bit of a challenge, I have to say, through the various modes of, bulla bubbles and various things. So we're so happy that we're coming to the final moment of getting those plans in the air, which is really, really great. There was a question before about insurance comment before about insurance, and that's been really looked at in detail. So there's insurance available for Fiji and specifically also available for cruising in Fiji. And so there's more than one insurance company that are offering that. So it's interesting because when we first started trying to get plans in the air back to Fiji, we were going for a COVID-free bubble without vaccinations. Sadly, that never happened. But now we're sort of almost there, I think, again, but with vaccinations, where Fiji's going to be, you know, it's quite unique if you compare it to somewhere like Hawaii, where, you know, you could be in a restaurant with, you know, half unvaccinated people or something like that. It's completely controlled because Fiji has a very high vaccination rate on the ground. The tourists are only allowed in, or I should say, rather than say only allowed, there's certain areas that they're excluding from travel, but basically all the resorts are CFC or COVID certified, basically. There's a whole industry-wide certification process. Okay. So anywhere a tourist goes, there'll be only vaccinated people. Everybody who gets on a plane will be double vaccinated. Everybody on the land's vaccinated. Everybody who gets on a plane is tested before they go, also a couple of days after they arrive. And that's why I thought it was interesting to provide that information, because there's a bit of misinformation going around initially about how you have to quarantine or something. Don't. Okay. All they're trying to do is just make sure that people haven't picked it up in the airport or on the plane or something after they get, you know, on the way.
So they're okay. Doing that. Good to know, Alison. That's great. Thank you so much for that. And of course, the rejuvenation of the cruise industry, which I think 18 months ago was being sort of forecast as being dead in the water. It's clearly not. And the cruise industry being groundwater, I've been bombarded with ads on my local streaming services and various other parts of my life. So I take it that it's up and running and going great guns again.
It is. It's happening. I'm not sure if you could say it's going great guns yet, but look, you know, there are a lot of ships in the water and a lot of places that need to be filled, and the cruise industry is very much adapting and figuring out how to survive and how to prosper in this new era, which is going to be an interesting one. But certainly, yeah, it is still happening in Europe at the moment, in the Caribbean, and it will continue to rebound. It's, you know, cruising's coming back to Australia quite soon as well. People, you know, it got a bad rap. There was some bad news around for a while, but people who love cruising really love cruising and can't wait to get back out there again. So I think it'll certainly bounce back in a big way.
Now, just before we get to some more calls, Ben, I just wanted to ask about local travel, as in national interstate travel. Every state and territory has its own rules of entry and exit. So I take it you're going to have to do a bit of homework here as well.
You are, most definitely. You know, every state has different rules, and it also has different rules for every other state. You know, if you're coming from New South Wales, it's going to be different than if you're coming from Western Australia or if you're traveling from the Northern Territory. There's a huge amount of information out there to get through, and it's not always completely solid. You know, Queensland has changed their rules, of which are going to come into effect once they hit an 80% double vaccination rate in the next couple of weeks. You know, that's a thing that's been changing every couple of days at the moment. So certainly I would advise people, and I would advise people on all of the stuff that we've been talking about today, to research it yourself and keep up to date right up until the moment that you travel. Because as we heard with the testing requirements going into the UK has just changed in the last couple of days, things are changing so rapidly at the moment that, you know, everything we say right now might be correct at this moment, but by this afternoon, it might be completely different.
Good point.
So it's really important to stay on top of this yourself and not just sort of think, okay, that's what that's like, and then I travel in 2 weeks and everything's going to be fine, because maybe by then it won't be.
That's a very timely reminder, Ben. So let's just issue a disclaimer right here and now. Any advice or heads ups we're giving you is of general advice only. But I mean, the warning that Ben's just made is incredibly apt, and that is everything is changing all the time. So as you plan, A, be flexible, but B, make sure you get the latest advice on where you're traveling to and its requirements, and then act upon it as quickly as you can. Anna's in Hobart. Anna, you just got back from travelling to the UK and you're in quarantine.
Yes, I'm in quarantine with my 18-month-old who's just learned to walk.
Joy, Anna. So that'll be just tops for you.
Yeah, this will actually, by the time I get out of here, be 34 days that I've spent in isolation with a toddler due to all the various travel requirements. So I guess my experience was very much that everything changed constantly. We were unlucky enough to get COVID in the UK, despite the fact that I'm vaccinated. And so we had to isolate for 10 days there and change our flights. And I guess one of the things I wanted to say was how fantastic it was to have a travel agent who could look at multiple different route combinations at the same time that we were needing to change our flights. The different states were announcing changes to their arrival and quarantine rules on a daily basis, New South Wales, Victoria, Tasmania. So it was really confusing to try and work out how I was going to get back, where we could quarantine, where I might be able to home quarantine rather than spend 14 days in a hotel with a toddler.
Yeah.
So the travel agent was fantastic at researching all of those. But the other thing I wanted to mention was subscribing to the Smart Traveller update.
Yes.
The UK government also has a similar service, and so I could check those in my inbox every day.
Oh, that's a really good piece of advice, Anna. And so you've just started your 14 days of quarantine?
We're actually on day 9. We've had our initial COVID tests, and we've got another set coming up. But one other thing perhaps might be of relevance to travellers, as more and more of us travel and unfortunately probably get COVID, is that there's an issue if your PCR test stays positive after having COVID, and then you're required to have a negative test for travel.
Right.
So we had to preempt that by getting a preemptive doctor's letter to state that a PCR test can stay positive for quite some time following COVID. As it was, my pre-travel test was negative, but I think that might be a situation that some people find themselves in, where they'll test positive because they've had COVID, but they're not infectious any longer.
And quickly, Anna, also while we're getting that advice from you, having contracted COVID despite having double vaccination, are you going through a hard time or are your symptoms mild?
No, and I think that's one of the other things that I would be keen to share, is that my symptoms were so incredibly mild, sort of like the kind of dry throat that might just get better in the morning after a cup of hot tea. But I had a high index of suspicion because there were really high rates in the UK, and my family member who we were visiting was immunosuppressed. So I got a PCR,
right.
But my symptoms were absolutely minimal. I was surprised. And even the whole way through, a couple of days, I maybe had a little bit of a dry cough, and I've got no ongoing symptoms. My toddler also had some symptoms, but again, really mild. So I feel very lucky to have had access to the vaccination.
Well, your toddler's sounding quite happy and satisfied there behind you in your hotel room, Anna. I hope that continues for the next 5 days, because you've got nine done.
We're at home.
You're at home? Oh, you're quarantining at home. Oh, good.
The Tasmanian government were kind enough to grant us permission to quarantine at home.
Oh, that's a blessing.
I think a hotel room would have driven us both crazy.
That's what I was thinking about you when you first came on the line. I'm glad to hear that, Anna. All the best, and I'm glad you got to go overseas. That's great to hear. Melbourne, let's go to Melbourne. Ian, now, you've been trying to rebook some flights personally. How's that been going for you?
That hasn't worked. We had a European trip booked for 2020. We, through a travel agent, we got most of our money back. There was a few accommodations that didn't work. But when I tried to use the credits with Qantas here in Australia to book other flights, we were going on the Ghan next year,
yeah.
I was told I couldn't personally book those flights. Because we'd booked through a travel agent, we'd have to go through a third party to try and reuse those credits we'd got from the European trip.
Oh, it gets complicated with that stuff, doesn't it? Yeah.
I was quite surprised that you couldn't just rebook it yourself. You have, because it was booked through a travel agent, for some reason has to go back through a third party again.
Right, so you may be forced to go back to that travel agent to make that happen, that rebook.
We're doing that at the moment because they're booking the car and everything for us, so it's easy to keep using the same travel agent.
That's good to hear, Ian. But the advice is, you know, if you're going to go through a third party, you might have to do whatever you need to do after that, again, through the third party. Let's go to Bob in Canberra. Now, Bob, you've been travelling, your lucky duck, to Italy, Sicily and Rome. Got back on Thursday. How's it all been?
It's gone very smoothly, surprisingly so. I've certainly needed to keep up to date with changes that are occurring.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate enough to be able to drive up through Austria and across down into Switzerland back to Italy without any problems at all. But it was fortunate timing, of course. I recognise that.
Yeah.
And in Italy, which is where I did most of my travel, I needed you meant to have a an Italian green pass, but I found that my pass from the Australian government showing that I was fully vaccinated was sufficient for me to get into restaurants, concerts, and travel.
So that's good to hear.
Within Italy.
Yeah, that's great. Bob, thank you very much for that. And in fact, Bob and Anna, Ben Groundwater, have actually prompted a whole range of things I wanted to ask you about. I know that Italy, where Bob has just been travelling, is one of the 11 countries, I think, Ben, where we have reciprocal medical agreements in terms of care, medical care. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Most of them tend to be in Western Europe. There's a few outside of that as well. But yeah, that means that you're covered for medical expenses under Medicare in those countries, which is amazing.
But that does not mean, and this is really important, I think, to emphasise this, this does not mean you don't need travel insurance. You definitely do.
Most definitely, yeah. I would not be setting foot outside of Australia without travel insurance right now, for sure.
But I understand, because even though you might have these reciprocal medical agreements, that doesn't include medical evacuation, which could cost you literally thousands of dollars if you come a cropper.
Or hundreds of thousands. Yeah, it can be a huge amount of money. If you need to be repatriated back to Australia, if you need a helicopter out of somewhere, if you need some sort of other transportation, you're looking at huge amounts of money. So there's only so much that reciprocal agreement, as you say, will cover you for. So most certainly still get travel insurance, definitely. And look into, read the fine print of your policy and make sure you know exactly what you're covered for, because there's a lot of different policies around at the moment, and a lot of them say they're covering you for COVID, but that can mean a range of different things within that policy. It can mean it's covering you for medical. Maybe it's not covering you for medical. As we were saying, pretty much none of them will cover you for things like lockdowns and cancellations. But there are sort of various intricacies within all of those policies that certainly bear paying attention to.
Now, the other point that Anna raised about Smart Traveller, always good to keep an eye on what government advice through Smart Traveller is telling us. But I was reading too that be very careful, because if you decide to go to a country against Smart Traveller advice, you may not be covered by your travel insurance.
Yeah, that's right. There's not many countries at the moment that are under the Do Not Travel banner, which is a rating that Smart Traveller gives for all countries. There used to be sort of green, orange and red. Green meaning off you go, have fun. Orange meaning exercise a degree of caution. And then there was reconsider your need to travel and do not travel. Right now, there are no green countries. Everywhere is yellow, orange or red. And that red is do not travel. And if you go to a country that's rated do not travel, generally you're not going to be covered by your travel insurance policy. It's worth looking into. There may be some that do, but in general, travel insurance companies don't cover you if you choose to travel to a country that's rated by Smart Traveller as do not travel. And again, that's a thing that can change very quickly. So keep an eye on that.
By the same token, though, I do think from what I've been reading, insurance companies will uphold a policy for claiming travel costs if that travel directive on Smart Traveller changes after you've entered the country. So,
yes,
that's right. Good.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. So keep that in mind. Anything else we need to think about as we try to organise and plan for travel either here or overseas, Ben?
Look, I think that idea of flexibility is really key. I know there are a lot of people who the way we used to travel is you had 2 weeks off work, and so you'd go somewhere for 2 weeks and you'd come back the day before and get ready and off you go back to the office. Things have changed in that respect at the moment. So I would be planning to plan for the worst in some ways. Think about what you're going to do if you're stuck in another country, because as your caller was saying, we're talking about all these PCR tests that you have to take in order to get on the plane, in order to get into other countries. But the fear is if you're positive, then you can't. You can't leave that country. You have to stay in that country. You may have to quarantine in managed facilities depending on where you are. You may just have to self-isolate somewhere in a hotel room, which you'll have to pay for. Maybe you've got family, which is great. But you'll need to stay in that country until you either test negative or you can get a letter from a doctor saying that you've recovered from COVID-19, because you can keep testing positive for up to 90 days afterwards, because there are fragments of the virus still in your system. So these are all things to think about when you're planning a trip. And what would I do if I'm going to be stuck in that country for another 10 days? How can I manage that? You know, particularly for people who have things like work and school and stuff to come back to. It's a thing to consider at the moment. It's it's a brave new world out there, and a scary world in some ways, and we really need to be thinking about Plan B and Plan C before you actually jump on that plane.
Well, Ben, all the best on your trip to South Australia. Cross fingers for that one. And it's been great to have you with us for Talkback. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Michael.
Travel writer, podcaster Ben Groundwater. Hilary, what are you seeing on text and Facebook?
Well, Michael, lots of questions circulating. And this comment from Graham on Facebook: until I know it's safe to do so, I won't be putting my life or anyone else's life at risk. And Chin agrees with Graham too. She says, even if you can travel now, there's a risk that the return trip may require quarantine, which can be costly and challenging to most. And Barbara on Facebook had some helpful information. She says COVID testing in Singapore is SGD135, available easily, and results are usually quite quick. But this texter had a really bad experience. August trip to Cairns, they begin. Flights changed by airline multiple times in the 2 weeks prior. Changed to stop overnight both ways in Melbourne, a hotspot that was in lockdown. So it would have meant 2 weeks quarantine both ways. Holiday was for 8 days only. Would have needed to stay longer just to complete quarantine and then return home for more quarantine. That's no good.
No.
Then she says the overseas phone operator simply could not understand the issue in 45 minutes on a call. Finally, it was changed again in a second phone call to 2 nights in Brisbane. Due to the changed flight schedule, I couldn't travel to Cairns on the same day, nor to Hobart. I lost 2 nights of my holiday, lost 2 nights paid accommodation, and then had to pay for 2 nights in Brisbane, one each way. I'm on a pension budget. This won't happen again because I don't want to endure that kind of stress and financial trauma again.